Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome, everyone, to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast. Not quite your average Star Wars podcast, and we're okay with that. But I'm here with my good buddy and Jedi Master, John Mills. John, how's it going, man?
It's going great, Matthew. I am looking forward to today's show very, very much. I know that both of us are anticipating this a great deal.
And I know exactly what you're talking about, John, because we have a huge announcement for all of the listeners.
That's right, we do. Go ahead, let them know.
Well, we are proud to announce that we are going to be joining the Nerd Party Network. As of today, which as this show drops on Tuesday, we are now part of the Nerd Party Network. We're proud to be a part of that with our friends Tristan and Matt Hansen, great guys, and they have invited us to be a part of their network. We've got all the shows there. We've got their show, The Senate Floor, which is a great show that talks about all kinds of nerd things, whether it's comics or movies or TV and so much more. And then Tristan and his wife, the girl, do a show called The Nerd Nuptial that just started, and it's just two married nerds talking about nerd things. I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't want to say I do to the married nerd life, because I'm living that dream, and it's pretty fantastic.
See, as somebody who is not in a nerd nuptial, as it would be, who married somebody from a different world, I can appreciate that podcast, and I can tell you that the conversations are very different between my wife and myself. So, hey, that's okay. She loves Star Wars, and so do I, and that's why we're all here at Aggressive Negotiations, proud to be part of the Nerd Party.
That's right. So we are just so excited. We're so honored to be a part of the Nerd Party. You can find everything at thenerdparty.com. You'll even be able to find access to all of the stuff Aggressive Negotiation wise. We'll still have our Twitter handle at The Jedi Masters, and we'll still be on Facebook right now in our own Facebook group under Aggressive Negotiations. So just make sure you check out all of those places. And if you're looking for the website, just hit up thenerdparty.com and I'll have links to every one of the different shows on the Nerd Party Network. And I gotta say, John, I think it's the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Agreed, Matthew, agreed.
On top of that, if that's not big enough news, John, did you know we're on iTunes?
We are on iTunes. You're absolutely right. And did you know, Matthew, that we have already gotten some pretty great reviews on iTunes?
What? No. Are you serious?
We have.
Wow.
And I think that as part of this, let's go ahead and let everybody know, this is the first part of a series of shows we're going to be doing. And so we're going to be reading out the reviews from iTunes, but we're going to be doing them, a few at a time, just so it's not a nothing but reviews show. And so if you haven't had an opportunity yet to get on over to iTunes and give us a rating and a review, we will go ahead and we will read it on the show. And so, you know what? I think I'd like to right now go ahead and share our first one.
Good job.
Which is titled The Force is With Them, and it's from PJC4774. And it says, "Great first episode, guys. I've heard you both before from Trek FM and always enjoyed your shows, so I knew I would hear too. I've always been a big Star Wars fan, and I am a staunch defender of the prequels." Good person.
Yeah, that's this guy needs a medal. Yeah,
there you go. "So I always get really annoyed with the flack they get." Yes, yes, yes. "I know I'll be a regular listener from here on out. Thank you. May the force be with you both." And with you, PJC4774. That's a great review. Thank you
very
much.
That is a great review. And, John, did you notice that's 5 stars, too? That's the highest you can get on iTunes.
I love that it's a 5-star rating. Absolutely love it.
Me, too. Well, I want to share a review from Galandra1. And goodness, John, this is another 5-star review, and the title says, "Already love this show." In fact, this review came right after we dropped our first episode, so they really must love the show. And what they had to say was, just one episode in and I am hooked. I listen to a lot of Star Wars podcasts, but unlike most hosts, Matthew Rushing and John Mills don't focus on the week's latest Star Wars news. Instead, the focus is on a topic and just geek out about it. It reminded me of the days long ago when I would meet with my friends who were fellow Star Wars fans at the comic book shop and just sit around in the store talking for hours about our passion for the wars.
Oh,
so. Matthew and John are great hosts and keep the show moving along. Here's to a long and successful run. Sure, there are a lot of Star Wars podcasts out there, but Aggressive Negotiations is a show that brings something different to the table. And you know what?
Yeah.
We do. You know why? Because we're aggressive about it.
That's right. If you're going to come to the negotiation table.
B-E. Aggressive.
Jedi cheerleader. You know, it's funny. They have healers. They have warriors. They have knights. Jedi cheerleader. We'll have to look into that. See if there's anything in the canon for Jedi cheerleader. They probably do fantastic routines.
I was just watching the Younglings arc on the Clone Wars the other day, and they did some really awesome looking like teepees and stuff when they were a part of that circus. So I feel like they'd be great at it.
They would. You have to wonder. And I want to share one last review for this show. Also a 5-star review from user Admiral Rex. And it starts off with, I'm hooked. This podcast is moving to the top of my playlist. Matt and John are two Jedi masters that love the saga. They bring smart, intelligent, and fun conversations that dig deep into Star Wars. Right out of the gate, I was hooked on the first episode. Who says Jedi can't have attachments? Thank you very much, Admiral Rex. We appreciate that. Great review. Seriously, everybody, we've said it on Facebook, we've said it on Twitter, and we'll say it here again. We're very flattered. We are very touched by the warm reception that the show has gotten.
Yes.
And we promise we will continue earning these 5-star ratings from you. So thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate it.
Well, you know how we're going to earn another 5-star review, John?
Uh-oh. How's that?
Well, today we're going to be continuing in this trend of taking listener ideas for shows. We did that last week. Stephen Ellison gave us the idea of picking our favorite ships, and we ran with that idea, I think. And this week we're going to start on a series, and this is going to be, we're not sure how many issues we're going to do on this, but listener Christopher Baca gave us the idea of talking about the Jedi. There's so much about the Jedi to talk about. So, John, I wanted to start with this question kind of about the Jedi is an interesting place to start with Episode 7 and Rey.
Hmm.
We have seen Jedi trained in the prequel trilogy. We've seen Jedi trained in the original trilogy. And now we're about to see Jedi trained in the sequel trilogy. And I'm just kind of wondering, what do you think that's going to look like? Especially since Luke has already tried training Jedi, and apparently that didn't go so well.
Yeah, I would say that Luke's failure was spectacular, would be, I think, a good word for it. I mean, considering the fact that it took the Jedi Order 1,000 years to produce a Jedi that helped kill all of them.
Yeah.
Luke is sort of an overachiever, I guess, because he was able to wipe his own Jedi Order out in 30 years with a student who turned
bad. Yeah, not bad, Luke. Way to go. You know, I don't know if that's when you want to be in the Guinness Book of Galactic Records.
Right.
You know,
maybe he messed up and he was like, oh, that's the record I'm not supposed to beat. Come on.
Son of a motherless goat.
Well, that's why he's looking for the first Jedi Temple. He's looking for somebody who failed more spectacularly than he did.
Maybe, although, you know, if I remember my Jedi history correctly, at least from the EU, you know, the Jedi reigned for a really long time before they came into kind of like a big war between them and the Sith. So I don't know. Maybe that's a good idea to go back.
Yeah. Well, OK. Yeah. Back, like a back to basics sort of thing. Sure. See,
or back in black. You know, maybe he'll just go back to wearing black.
Oh, I like that. I like that very much. But, you know, I'll say this is that I think, and we've had our views about Episode 7 out there and everything like that. And, you know, so I'm not going to retread anything like that. I'm treating Episode 7 now and its presumed history between Episode 6 and it as you know, I'm filling in the gaps mentally. I'm sure, you know, we both know they're going to have stuff that, you know, is potentially going to refute what I'm about to say. But with episode 7, I think that what we will see is we will see Rey go into training like
Luke
did.
You mean episode 8, John? Because you said 7, and I think you mean 8.
Oh, yeah, whatever. You know what? No, yeah, whatever. But yeah, with Rey, she's going to go into training, and she is, I think that the training is going to mirror more closely the one-on-one sort of training that Luke got. Because I think that, and what I hope that they are sort of proving, is that in Luke's attempt to mimic the Jedi Order is where he went wrong. That the Jedi should have kept the lesson that I think they should have taken from the prequels, which is there was too much structure. There were too many people. Like, a Jedi school is not necessarily a good idea. Yeah, the Jedi should be in communication, but it should be more of a one-on-one training so that you, you know, yeah, if somebody's showing.
I can see that.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean,
yeah,
do you
totally
see it going
like
that way?
I can totally see what you're saying, because I was thinking to myself, it seems like Luke probably took the idea of the Jedi Order that he must have found, you know, I mean, obviously he's got R2-D2, who knows everything about the Jedi Order because he was there for the whole thing. He was in the temple. He has all of these records so that, you know, if you wanted access, R2's had access to everything in Star Wars.
Wow. Okay. I know that this is sort of jumping in, but actually with you saying that, do you think that R2 would have been the one to tell Luke about everything Anakin did?
I don't know. That's a great question, but I would hope so. You know, I would say in the EU, that is kind of how we found out about, and that Leia and Luke found out about their mother, was finding recordings that had been, you know, kind of stuffed down in R2's memory banks, and them coming out and them under, you know, learning who Padme was and all that kind of stuff. So it just would make sense because of who R2 is. And I mean, literally, I was just watching the arc with Yoda on the Clone Wars at the very end, and R2's on that journey as well. I mean, so he's really been, I mean, he's like Jeffrey Combs of Star Wars. He is everywhere.
Yeah.
So
that's, you know what? That's true though, because, okay, all right. So with Luke, why wouldn't he have used R2 as a resource? Like, is it that R2 has forgotten stuff? Was there a memory wipe that we don't know about at some point? But R2 really has been there for everything. Like, shouldn't R2 have been the one to, like, when Luke started implementing ideas, to be like, hey, tweet, tweet, doodle, doot. No, no, no. Bad idea, bad idea.
You know, part of it for me is the idea that R2 probably has all this stuff, but because he has so much information that it's difficult for him to have the instant recall. So you would probably have to ask R2 a specific question. And so where I was going with all of that before kind of got off on the R2, it was this idea of what I think happened is that Luke tried to create a large Jedi Order too quickly. He tried to train multiple students instead of finding one person to invest in and to train. And then there's two. Then they can both have a new apprentice and so on and so forth. And to grow it slowly, I think Luke tried to go too fast, too quickly. And that may be because, like you were talking about, this idea of this one-on-one. Because, I mean, obviously the prequel Jedi understand that as well. Jedi younglings are trained at the temple, but then they are given one-on-one masters. Mm. And they are trained for, well, we don't even know how long, because it seems to be quite an exorbitant amount of time that a Jedi Padawan is with their master. And it's only really when we see the Jedi in the Clone Wars specifically where that process is sped up. Otherwise, you get the feeling like it takes, I mean, how old is Obi-Wan Kenobi in episode 1? I mean, he's what, 21, 22, 23 probably?
He's around 20. Because I know that Anakin makes a comment in episode 2 about feeling that he's being held back, and Anakin actually said, "I'm a slow learner," when he's fighting Dooku and everything like that. Like, there's sort of a, you know, an intimation that Obi-Wan has kept Anakin back even longer, and he's only about 20. But I think if we... Is it still considered canon? Because with everything that got blown away with the EU, I still get a little fuzzy. Is it still considered canon that Obi-Wan was considered not going to be a knight, sent to the Agrarian Corps, and then Qui-Gon was the one that was like, no, I can do something with this kid, and brought him forward?
Well, that really comes from Jude Watson's Jedi Apprentice series, and those are not canon anymore. Nothing is canon except for... the very last Dark Horse comic, which was the Darth Maul Son of Dathomir onward. So I think what really it means is that there's a lot of story to tell with a character like Obi-Wan.
Okay.
And there's a lot we still don't know about him because there had been a bunch that's filled in and now it's gone. So, I kind of still hold some of that stuff in my brain as more canon-ish, just because it hasn't been overwritten yet. But honestly, the real answer is we just don't know.
Okay. Well, fair enough. I mean, I think where I'm going mentally, though, because we keep hitting on the one-to-one thing, is it possible? Yes, the Sith are evil. That is true. I don't care what sort of gobbledygook sort of double speak you can do. The Sith are evil, period. End of sentence. And the Jedi... even though they lose their way, their intentions are good. They're not evil to the core. They're just messed up. Is it something where the big lesson should have been that the Sith actually had something to teach the Jedi? That it is a master and an apprentice, the one-to-one. And to speak to your point, that Luke needs to train Rey up, and then Rey needs to train somebody else up. And then when she's training somebody, then Luke can take another apprentice. And they sort of go one-to-one through that and just grow it very slowly. Because, like, the big flaw with the Jedi was the fact that they grew large and became the police force of the galaxy. And is that Luke's aim? Like, I'm desperate to find out what was Luke's aim. Was Luke's aim to create, like, a temple where the students all gathered and they were all collegial and they would go off and do their own thing? There weren't missions, per se. Or was he trying to grow it into the Jedi task force for the galaxy again? What do you think Luke's intention was with what he did?
That's a really good question. And my feeling is, and I would hope, and this is where the idea that the Force Ghosts come in, and having, again, just watched that Yoda arc, Qui-Gon mentions something to Yoda, and he says, only a few Jedi will be walking this path of being able to stay and bring their consciousness into the Force after they die. But there must be light in the dark for future generations. And to me, it feels like that somehow those ghosts didn't show up, and maybe they will in episode 8 to help bring home the lesson of, this. Don't be bound by a government. Even in that Yoda arc, they find out the Sifo Dyas had gone on a mission because the Chancellor Valorum had sent them on a mission, but the Jedi had no idea that that mission had happened because the Jedi were under the preview of the Senate and the Chancellor. And so hopefully, somehow, that idea comes out to Luke. Look, we need to be about following the will of the Force, because Yoda says something really important in the Younglings arc in the Clone Wars, and he says this to those younglings before they go looking for their crystal. He says, the Force made physical, the Jedi is.
Yeah.
And that idea, I think, is huge, because I think Yoda believes that's what the Jedi are, but I think they lost that, and they lost their way from that. You know, they had stopped being about the living Force, as we all know from Qui-Gon, and been sure. More about this bureaucracy.
but see, I sort of take from that, because that's from I forget what the name of the episode was.
The Gathering,
right? Yeah, where they go to get the crystals. I always viewed that as sort of like a pep talk sort of thing, where he's saying, you're supposed to act within the will of the Force. I mean, isn't all life a manifestation of the will of the Force, in a sense? You know, because it very much takes that sort of Buddhist mentality that there was pure energy and then it tasted matter and so it wanted to become matter, and that's where the midichlorians come in and talk back and forth with everything. I'm not trying to discount what Yoda says in that episode. I think that's a good point on your part, but you know, what I would throw back at that is that Yoda, he doesn't communicate. I mean, obviously, you know, it's easy to make a ton of jokes with what I'm about to say with the way Yoda speaks, where, you know, Yoda doesn't always communicate himself clearly. He's so hooked on speaking in riddles. I mean, and it's not just his sentence structure, but he's always trying to, he's not a guru, he's a swami. He's trying to bring people up to his level. But, you know, getting back to sort of like the Luke thing and where it's going to go in episode 8 from everything that leads up to episode 7. In episode 6, Yoda says to Luke, "No more training do you require." It feels to me, especially with the fact that we have no idea whether the ghosts continued appearing to Luke or not, it seems to me that there was some training, at least some history, that Yoda really should have filled Luke in on. Like,
yeah,
I understand Luke's training was accelerated, but Obi-Wan is able to appear to him almost in the flesh. Like, he's full life size. He practically walks out of the swamp and is like, "Yo, Luke, what's up?"
I mean, he's better than a cardboard cutout.
Yes. So. Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, hey, yeah, she's your sister. Hey, sorry about that. But like, that seems awkward. Almost like what time pressure was Luke under? Where, you know, your feelings could be made to serve the Emperor, you know, guard them closely. Okay. And then Luke gets up and leaves. You'd think Obi-Wan's ghost could at least be like, "And by the way, we really need to talk a little more after this."
Right.
So that
right.
If you succeed, we're going to have to go through mistakes that were made
right.
that you don't
right.
want to copy.
Well, and I feel like that is something that... This is the one frustration I think that I have as a Star Wars fan about doing this 30 years later thing. It's like there's so much storyline that is missing. And I think this would be cool. What if a part of training Rey is retraining Luke? And so that Obi-Wan does come back and says, "Look, we needed to let you try on your own before we just helped you, told you what to do. We needed you to make some mistakes, you know."
Okay.
And because you know what I'm saying? So that Yoda and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are there in the Force and they're watching what's happening, and their goal is to try and let Luke do it on his own to see what happens, but also to know that he may make some mistakes, and you learn better from mistakes than you do from just having, you know, instant success.
What if because the title is The Force Awakens, you could almost say, like, you know, if you go to, you know, the next plane as a Jedi and, you know, initially you're communicating in this case with Luke and it's like, "Hey, you know, let's touch base. Let's keep things going." Over time, I mean, I would imagine that the concept of time and certain things become less real to, you know, spirit Obi-Wan or spirit Yoda.
I mean, yeah, Qui-Gon does say to Yoda when they're on Dagobah, that for me, time has no meaning, basically.
Right.
It's I am where time has no, it doesn't matter.
Right. And so
everything
the thing is
now.
It's
he's
not
like a prophet.
Right. It's not so much that they abandon him. It's that for them, they're like, they're off in the, you know, the nether world and they're like going along. And then it's Rey touching that saber is almost like a beacon that goes off. That's like, need you guys back.
I can see that.
Come on back. We need you here. And that, you know, like maybe that's the hook. But here's the question. Rey hears Yoda, hears Obi-Wan, and has that knowledge. And it, you know, she must bring it to Luke. Do you think, like, I'm really intrigued by what you said about part of it is retraining Luke. Maybe what it is that Rey is the student he always should have had, but for whatever reason, instead, he winds up with Ben. Like, Ben is the student that he never should have had. Ben never should have tried to train as a Jedi.
And that's an interesting thing because, you know, Leia says, "I sent him to train with Luke because I thought it would help."
Right.
So it almost seems as if it wasn't necessarily Luke's idea in the first place to be training Ben. Leia sent him Ben.
And that could almost speak to why Luke hasn't spoken to them. Like, I mean, I like that because it adds layers to them not speaking to each other for a long time. Luke going off and saying, I got to disconnect. There's too much baggage here.
I want to bring us back towards the prequels, because in light of this conversation, and what's so interesting is that, you know, one of the most interesting things about the Jedi Order was that they are a monastic order, basically.
Yeah.
Much like priests in the Catholic Church, they kind of take vows. They don't have a vow of celibacy, apparently, but they do have a vow of, of non-attachment. And so, but they're taken as young children. In fact, we know from the Clone Wars, you know, there's a holocron that has all of the Force-sensitive children throughout the galaxy in it. And when they are ready, they are taken to the temple with the permission of the parents. They are not stolen. This is not the First Order. Don't give me that crap, people.
Hold on. I want to come back to that, though.
Let's talk about it now.
Okay, fine.
Go ahead.
Let's talk about it right now.
We're going to aggressive negotiate right now.
All right. The Jedi Order does not steal children in the sense that we would say they stole children. They forcefully take them. We see, especially in the arc you're talking about, Cad Bane posing as a Jedi and being like, hey, you know, I'm going to take your kid off to be a Jedi. And everybody's like, oh, cool. But in a sense, if the Jedi shows up to a family and says, I can give your kid a better life, that's a hell of a predicament to put the parent in. How is a parent going to say no to that? I mean, obviously, Count Dooku's parents, Count Dooku came from means. So you can't say that they only went after, you know, like it would be very easy to be like, oh, well, you know, they only went after, you know, the poor or the less fortunate.
In that arc, they you know, you see children from Rhodia, you see a Gungan child. I mean, they're children from every walk of life, of every type of species. I mean, I even think about the Younglings arc, you know. Huang says to the Wookiee, Gunji, he says, oh, rare are you for the Jedi. So Wookiees, apparently, there are not a lot of Jedi from Kashyyyk. So
with all of that, though, they don't steal in the traditional sense. But what I want to focus on is the sort of the re-education camp philosophy of it, because they take all of the attachments away. A human is a social creature, wants to be attached or a being, you know, because obviously, you know, Wookiee isn't a human and everything like that. But like, you have a being that wants to be social and form friendships. So basically the friendships, the Jedi Order positions itself to replace the family so that the Jedi are dedicated to them. And you even see in Christy Golden's fantastic Dark Disciple, somebody like Quinlan Vos, he's the fun guy that everybody loves to hang out with. You know, he's like, hey, what's up,
guys? Unless you're Obi-Wan.
Well,
I mean, he doesn't love hanging out with Quinlan, but
you get what I'm saying. Like the similarity is in the reconditioning. Like why do the Jedi shut them off from their families?
I don't think that it's reconditioning. Put it this way, there are Jedi too that have families. We know from canon sources that Coyote Mungi, because of the type of race that they are, there's an exemption for them to be able to have a family.
And in case anybody's wondering that doesn't know the characters as well as we do, Coyote Mungi was the guy with the cone head sat next to Yoda, and in episode one, the Sith have been extinct for a millennium.
Yes, exactly.
That
he
guy
doesn't come off all that much better in the Clone Wars series, for the most part. But you know, I think that I can understand what the Jedi are trying to do. You know, they are trying to create beings who are completely selfless and, in that sense, are willing to live and give their lives for the will of the Force and for the protection of others. And the best way to do that is to not feel so attached to something that you would rather live yourself than give your life for another. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's really not that strange of an idea. Now, I think that they what happens is that after 1,000 years of that, they begin to become a little bit too dogmatic about that whole idea. And I think that they also do forget that love, as Anakin says in episode 2, sacrificial love, you know, agape love, basically.
Yeah.
Unconditional love is the life of a Jedi. I feel like, let's put it this way. I feel like Obi-Wan and Satine could have been together, and Obi-Wan could have still been an amazing Jedi, because that's just the kind of character that Obi-Wan is. He has that selflessness. You know, he could have still been a Jedi fully and loved her, and they could have been married and all that. I feel that from that character.
See, this is where I sort of go back and forth. Like, I can understand why the Jedi had the rules that they did, but I think that the codification of those rules over time, like, basically, you made a reference to the Jedi as sort of like Catholic priests earlier, and I would instead turn that and turn it into, especially because you have Anakin coming along as a messianic figure, and then Luke, and then potentially Rey coming along as these messianic figures, that the Jedi Order more closely resembles, in a sense, the Pharisees and the Sadducees from Jesus' day.
Interesting.
Where you have, like, because the Pharisees were strict about the law. So you got Mace Windu. These are the rules,
right,
and this is how it works. Then you have the Sadducees, who focused on the temple as a path. And I would kind of put Yoda there, because the Sadducees also rejected the idea of an afterlife or resurrection. They were like, yes, we're the children of God, and this is how it works, but there's nothing afterward. And Yoda didn't believe in anything afterward. But then you see, I think, the Jedi model being more like what Yoda and Obi-Wan became, which is the Essenes. Who, you know, they were ascetics. They lived hermits' lives. They had vows of poverty. There were many of them, but they didn't like come and hang out at the temple sort of thing. They were out there living alone, contemplating mysteries.
Well, and one of the things that I think part of that was is the whole idea, you know, and I think this actually, to get biblical again, this idea comes from the Apostle Paul, too. Paul says, for me, it is better not to be married, because I'm not bound by anything. I'm not held down by anything. If God calls me here, I can go here. You know, the same thing with a Jedi. If the Force calls me here, I can go here, because I don't have anything tying me to anything else.
Right.
And I think that's the point of the Jedi, is they were meant to be people that were the physical manifestation of the Force, coming back to that idea of what Yoda says to the younglings. And to do that, they realized, well, if I have a family, you know, at home, there aren't times that I can just drop everything and go for the will of the Force. You, as a father, you can't just drop everything and go to China because you felt the call, you know?
Right. I completely get that. And I would also add to it, because you said earlier that the Jedi are not celibate.
Well, George has said that they are, that, you know, they can, you know, and do have relations, but you know, it's not a binding thing, I guess.
I know, but if they can't have a relationship, then that means they can only have meaningless sex, right? They can't have sex in the context of emotional fulfillment. It's just a release then, right?
It sounds like yes.
Is the implication then that the Jedi would go to houses of ill repute while on Coruscant? Or was there it was a large temple? Was there like a harem room for the Jedi?
My thought was this, is that, you know, certain Padawans may get to know each other throughout the years, and they'll be at the temple at the same time.
Oh, so you're saying,
you know, like
Padawan to Padawan.
You know, that Padawans may find somebody that they get along with, they like, and they may stay friends throughout the years, throughout the temple, through temple life. But then, of course, you know, if they happen to be back at the temple at the same time, they may, you know, shack up for the night together and then go their separate ways. And I think that that would be obviously, I think, for anybody other than a serene Jedi, fully in touch with the Force, to be able to have that loving friendship connection with somebody, but not allow it to go any further. And again, I think we come back to the idea of looking, say, again, in the Clone Wars, opened so many of these doors up for questions with, Obi-Wan and Satine.
Right.
You know, Obi-Wan saying, and I think he's very truthful when he says that on that Voyage of Temptation episode, I would have left the Jedi Order if you had asked.
Right.
You know, and that he was willing to do the right thing by the Jedi and by her to leave and go live a normal life.
But see, here's the question, though, is why couldn't they have set up the order so that to get back to the priestly thing that we've referred to, there's Roman Rite Catholic priest who's the celibate, no relationship sort of thing. But there's another order where they can't do certain things, but they are still considered priests and they can be in committed relationships. It's just that they can't do like the full thing. So why wouldn't the Jedi have set it up so that there would be different classes of Jedi? So like a Jedi Knight goes out and is the one that's you know, no attachments, nothing going on. But if you had, say, for instance, Jocasta Nu, Jedi Librarian, could she have a family? Could she have fallen in love and gotten married?
You know, when you played the Jedi Academy game, you got to pick the different types of Jedi you want to be, like a mm-hmm. counselor or, you know, a knight or, you know, whatever. I can't remember the designations, but there were different responsibilities and or certain innate powers that came with choosing a certain type of Jedi. So I think your question there is, it's really valid. And what I think it is, it became that, you know, after 1,000 years of living that life, you stop questioning why we do what we do, and mm-hmm. it just becomes accepted. And then, of course, you know, I think the first person to really challenge that is Anakin. And, you know, at that point, it's too late. Everybody's stuck in this malaise of what we've always done, and then that's just the way it is. Without thinking to question, is this the way that it should be? Or should the Jedi find a way to evolve and maybe change right. itself to allow certain people or even anyone in its order to say, you know what, I would like to be in a committed relationship. And the moment that if that relationship causes me to not be able to do my duty as a Jedi Knight, then I will relinquish my rights as a Jedi Knight. And you know what I'm saying? Like, well, yeah. Why can't we grow up and like find a new way?
But see, to tie that back into the thread that kicked this all off, talking about Luke and what, you know, what he's trying to do, maybe what it is that Luke didn't realize that he's not the leader of a temple type of Jedi, that his type of Jedi is the Essene, is the monk that lives off by himself, that has wisdom. And when you climb the mountain and ask him for the wisdom, he gives the wisdom to you and then says, now get out of here and go do your own thing.
It could be. And I always actually, I think for me personally, what I always felt like Luke would be was more of the EU type of Luke, where he would be somebody who would get married and find because I felt like what it felt like is that the Jedi Order to me needed to grow, and that growth, part of that growth could happen, not every Jedi has to get married,
yeah,
but I just felt like that would be an interesting way to go, or that it would be okay for them to have partners or spouses or anything like
sure.
that. But it wouldn't be the life that every Jedi chose, you know, but that it would be open, and that
right.
would be one of the things that the Jedi learned through, you know, 1,000 years and then a huge, big mistake.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that like Luke needed to realize that the ultimate lesson, the ultimate wisdom is to listen to the Force, and the Force would tell you should be this kind of Jedi.
Yes.
And I actually applaud the idea that Luke is destined to be the lone hermit, because it's more like who his masters were.
Right. Well, and I also think, too, it makes sense, again, because like what we were talking about, that you need to start small. You can't try and create an entire order in 30 years. You need to start at the beginning. You need to start with passing on all that you've learned completely to one person and then start the process over again. And for Luke, somebody, you know, I don't, you know, we think Rey is his daughter. So yeah, it's obvious that he may have fallen in love and gotten married and something happened, but that, yeah, his life has become more like an Obi-Wan, more like a Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he is right now. That doesn't mean he'll be there forever. But at this point, it's to train Rey. And it makes it so interesting because, you know, when we look back at a youngling being taken to the Jedi Order, which I thought was so interesting, this idea that I always wondered how that worked. Do the Jedi commune together and in through the Force they feel the different, you know, light, kind of like, do they have a room like, and Professor X, but Yoda puts on the helmet and he can feel all the different Jedi throughout the universe, and he's like, one on Rodia there is, you know, one on Tatooine there is, you know, that's what I feel like it's got to be like. And then they record that on the holocron and then they go visit. But I love that idea of the Jedi humbly coming to somebody's home, like that Gungan's home, and she says, you know, this master came to me and explained about, you know, my child and that they were strong with the Force, and, you know, that basically they would like permission when the time comes to be able to come and take them to the temple and train them to be a Jedi. And like you said, I feel like it's one of those things that, what an honor for a family to have that happen to them. And like you said too, it's kind of cool because it happens to people from all over the universe, from different walks of life. But one of the neat things that I think is cool about the Jedi Order from the prequels is that everybody's on the same playing field. You know, when you all grow up at the temple, you don't know that one person came from a rich family, really, and the other one came from a poor family. It's not about that. And the only thing that changes is how you grow as a Jedi.
Very stimulating. I think that we've opened I think that we've opened a holocron worth exploring with this topic. I think this is a good kickoff to our special Jedi arc.
Yeah, I'm excited, John. I think this is going to be great. And we are so excited to be continuing on in this series next week. And of course, if you would like to contact us, we would love to hear from you. Again, you can go to thenerdparty.com to find all about aggressive negotiations. You can also go to Twitter and catch up with John and I on The Jedi Masters. If you'd like to send us an email, we've gotten some emails already. We love getting those. It's at aggressivenegotiations@gmail.com. Make sure when you put that email in there, you only have one S in aggressive. We weren't so aggressive with that word when we created that email. And you can also join the conversation on Facebook. Come on over. Like us on Facebook. We've got so much we're talking about there. On our Facebook group, and just search for aggressive negotiations there. Or again, go to thenerdparty.com. You'll get connected with all the places you can find our show. It's incredible.
It is. It's incredible. It's wonderful. It's awesome. And you guys are awesome. And, you know, Matthew, you've told them where they can find the show. Go ahead and tell them where they can find you.
John, you can find me on Twitter personally at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing The Orb on the Trek FM network with Christopher Jones, exclusively about Deep Space Nine. I also do a show there called The 602 Club, which is so much fun. It's a general geek show. I really enjoy doing that show. We talk about everything there. And in fact, we actually have Star Wars shows there that John and I have been a part of. You can even find the Star Wars special feed, so you can search for that in iTunes as well. I do Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. And we actually get to interview the authors, so be sure to check that out. It's a blast. And yeah, that's pretty much everywhere I am. John, heck, where are you?
Well, you'll find me causing trouble on Twitter under the moniker Kessel Junkie. You can also find me on the Trek FM network as part of Commentary Trek Stars that I co-host with Mike Schindler, where we examine the non-Trek work of Star Trek creators. And you can find me on a podcast called Words with Nerds that I co-host with my buddy Craig, where we talk about a lot of things, a lot of strange things. So come on over and check us out.
Well, John, I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.